Well, my name is Bruce Blackstone. I'm 62 years old. I have been a lover of music my whole life and have always been involved in one way or another with music, including being a musician. Well, I would think like probably my first most profound musical memory would be as a teenager being in the 70s, being a child of the 70s, and being completely enamored with the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin. And there were certain songs of theirs that I loved more than other songs. Not necessarily their big number one hits. And so I'm about 15, 16 at the time, and a family moves into the apartment next door. He's a couple of years older, and of course it's like, hey man, what bands are you into, blah, blah, blah. I tell him, you know, Stones, Led Zeppelin. He's like, you know, what are your favorite songs, man? Dude, whatever, the way we talked in the 70s. And I tell him these songs, and he says, dude, those are blues songs. They're the same. And I say, no, they're not. And he goes, go listen to them and we'll talk. And I come back and I'm like, yeah, they have a predictability to them. They're all, I mean, now I know they're all 12-bar blues, right? But the soundscape of the songs are radically different, but the progression, the musical, you know, it's 1-4-5. Any musician who knows anything knows what a 1-4-5 is. 1-4-5, 12-bar blues. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. And it's predictable. And then he goes, I want you to go look at who wrote all of those songs, and then I want you to come back and come talk to me. Something like that. It wasn't that formal. It was more in cool 70s, rapport between two boys, whatever. So we're both teenagers. I'm like 15, 16. He's like 17, 18. Like he's this really cool guy who knows Aikido and never wears shoes, you know. Like he was cool. So a lot of those songs were written by a cat by the name of Willie Dixon. I'm like, okay. So I go back and it's Willie Dixon. He goes, go get the White Pages, dude, or man, or whatever. And Willie Dixon's in the Chicago phone book, and I'm like, what's going on? And he goes, he wrote a lot of those tunes, and it's performed by another Chicago blues artist by the name of Muddy Waters. And my mind is like completely blown because these guys are from Britain, you know? They're British rock and rollers. I mean, how in the world did they, I mean, really? So, of course, I go out and I buy a Muddy Waters record, and I put that record on, and I'm sorely disappointed because it just sounds like these tired, old, you know, black dudes who've survived all hell, who have survived all hell, you know, it's like, it doesn't have the drive that the rock tunes had, but I was so driven to, like, I wanted to hear what my idols heard. I wanted to hear what Eric Clapton heard. I want to hear what Jimmy Page heard. I want to hear what Mick Jagger heard. I want to hear what Keith Richards, you know, I wanted to hear what those, what did they heard something in that drove them to make that. And so I kept listening to it until I finally got it. And it was really healing for me because one of the things that I realized why I was so enamored of the blues, for one thing, you can feel the change in a blues tune, right? A lot of times you can listen to a blues tune. If you have the ear for like Chicago style blues, you can be listening to a blues recording you've never heard of, and you can feel when they're going to do a break, or you know, you can feel when the end comes, right? There is this kind of a predictability to the blues that was very satisfying to me. And I realized at that very young age that I didn't have a lot of predictability in my life at that time. Just, you know, whatever, family, the times, the 70s, blah, 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 deep inner city of Chicago. I was kind of half at home, half on the streets kind of thing. So there was this predictability to it. But also there was this deep emotionality to it that was very soothing and very healing for me. So that, I would say that is my grandest musical memory, for lack of a better word. Well, and also, right, so other than blues artists, I didn't really know anything of the Chicago music scene. Now, that's partly because the south side of Chicago where I lived, it's a neighborhood called Hyde Park. And Hyde Park, basically, to put it as, it was, most of Hyde Park was kind of heavily influenced by the University of Chicago, right? And in the late 50s and early 60s, the University of Chicago bought up all the strip joints and bars and clubs to gain more respectability for the University of Chicago. So there wasn't any live music to be had in Hyde Park. You would either have to go very far north or very far west or very far south. So if you're a teenager, like, that's right, that's not going to be so easy. Well, not to mention, you know, drinking age and all of that. But there was no live music happening in my neighborhood. It was all happening outside of the neighborhood. The first live venue I went to was Kingston Mines. It's been in several locations. It's now on Halsted and near Fullerton in Chicago on the near north side. When I first went, actually, I don't even remember where it was, but it was like a two-hour bus drive to get there. The show starts at 9:30. You're getting home about when the sun comes up, right? And I had to get a phony ID to get in, and blah, blah, blah. And the first blues band I saw was Eddie Clearwater Blues Band. And he played a lot like Muddy Waters, which is actually why he called himself Eddie Clearwater. It was a play on clear water, muddy water. But you brought up a question that maybe you could answer, and I'm surprised I haven't really thought of this before. For these Brit guys, I mean, they have their own tradition. They had skiffle music, right, which a lot of the rock and roll, part of the antecedent, is this kind of British folk music, skiffle music. Jimmy Page's first appearance on the BBC, he's 15 years old, playing in a skiffle band, Jimmy Page being the guitarist for Led Zeppelin. They all had that skiffle background. What is it about the blues, you know, across the pond, like these horribly repressed black people? I mean, it's worse than repressed or up. I mean, it's God, right? What about that spoke to them that they wanted to attempt to play it? I mean, Eric Clapton, he didn't just want to integrate that music. He wanted to do that music. He wanted to play like Muddy Waters. And he was extremely disappointed in himself that he would never be able to play like, you know, Muddy Waters. But what was it about that black blues and musical, rich, incredible heritage that didn't speak to us white guys here but it spoke to those white guys across the pond. Do you have any clue? The only thing I can think of is that there was something so emotionally immediate and gratifying about that form of music. The one thing that does come to mind is like, so it is really right after World War II that, you know, Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, and all those guys, right? I mean, they're still rebuilding London, right? Housing, there's housing shortages, there's still food shortages, there's still, right? The memory of that, you know, being bombed by the Nazis, and I don't know, maybe that amount of suffering that they went through or know that their parents had went through, maybe that's what somehow connected them to the suffering that drove, you know, African-American blues music. Yeah, there's a... I think you're right. There's a rootedness to that music. It is, I mean, we call it roots music, but because it's the root of all other music, but there is something deeply, deeply, deeply rooted. I did a research project in college where I, through a series of recordings, you know, found a recording of a Senegambian in a rice field singing, and it's he's singing in African, but it's a minor pentatonic scale, you know. And in this recording, they actually kept splicing it back and forth between I forget who it was, some acoustic blues recording from the early 30s or 40s. It happens to be pretty much in the same key. And the melodies blend almost seamlessly. Like you can hear the connection from, you know, Africa, you know, to here. And then from here, you know, and then with inside myself, wow, from here to across the pond and then, you know, and then back again. Right. Regardless of what the scale is that they use, you always have the octave. Yeah, he just happened to move in next door. His name was Joel Deutsch. I've tried to friend him on Facebook, and he hasn't accepted my friendship, but it appears he's not really on. Oh, my God. But also just, like, because this is part of your interest as well, just the fact now that from talking to you now, I'm a little more curious about what it was for the Brits that it was. Like, how do we find that out, you know? I got the rare opportunity once was being in a recording studio here in Tucson, and they had up on the computer screen Sergeant Pepper's. I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, they had the original four track that was recorded on four tracks. Yeah. And they had the four. I don't know where they got. They had the four tracks up on the computer screen. I could put on the headphones, and I could raise and lower the faders for each track. Because, you know, Paul McCartney had a ranch out in Reddington Pass somewhere, and there was a lot of stuff floating around Tucson because of local musicians and local recording studios and whatnot. People got a hold of stuff. I ran into somebody in Tucson who played me a scratch recording of Get Back. And it's like JoJo was a man who was a Pakistani and he drove a taxi cab, which the original lyrics, which was mind-blowing. Sergeant Pepper's, and listening to these four tracks, it is just John Lennon. And they've got that little slap echo on his voice, right? Because you only have the four tracks to put in, right? And so this is what you hear. You hear this, you hear him singing, and then you hear him chewing gum, and then you also hear the cans, the headphones, that's bleeding through just a little bit through the microphones, and you have this eerie feeling like you're standing in the room with just John Lennon. I don't know, freaky stuff, yeah. Well, thank you so much.